that he brings up in this lesson today that really requires more time to discuss, which is why we will devote a full week next week to some of the things that he talks about here. And let's just go very, very basic. Why do we even need law? Okay, we can. I can, but why does man need...
He said it there because every man is a sinner and they need the law and they need checks and balances.
We need law because man is a sinner. Man is inherently a law breaker, a violator. Let's step out of the Christian worldview for a minute. Why do we need law?
To protect myself and my things.
Okay. I want protect, but again, the question goes, why do you need protection for your things?
Is that humanistic part of it where we're self-centered? And so I want barriers and walls to help protect me from others because I know that they are that way.
How do you know that?
Conversely, it could be
inside. Isn't man basically good, though?
The 1%, right?
We can always say it the other way around. It's just, I want everything. I don't care what you think. I'm just going to get rid of you and I'll take whatever.
You know, it really gets goofy when we go, why do we need law if you do not have a basis for understanding man's fundamental state, what man is here today, that man is a rebel against the living God. Law, Scripture states, law is for the lawless. Law is for the lawless. One who is law-abiding is going to operate within the constraints of that which is right and wrong. Law really delineates a right and a wrong, does it not? And
well, it should. Not all laws. I mean, they say abortion is legal, but is that
okay?
A good law?
So,
where's that authority come from?
Exactly.
Where's your measuring cup for that standard?
What
is it, God, or is it based on morality?
You know, ideally we are using law to say these things on this side of this line are good, correct, and proper for the functioning of the citizenry. And on the other side, this is lawlessness. This is inherently bad. But if I don't have a foundation from which to declare that which is good and bad, right and wrong, our laws become arbitrary. It becomes the oppression of the majority. Because man does not have something on which one man can speak against the 99% and say, you're wrong. Dizzying. Right and wrong. Where does that come from?
The ultimate judge.
Good. You know, I can say from the Bible, but then where does the Bible come from? It comes from God. What is the Bible but a reflection to us of the glory of God? Of rightness and wrongness, where we see such brilliance in Him, that He is life, that He is love, that He is faithful, that He is good, that He is giving, all these attributes of God. You look at all of the attributes of God, and therein we see good, we see right. And what is wrong or evil except that which stands opposed to Him? God, in his law to us, in his word, his very word to us, has established and given us very clearly and plainly a right and wrong. And you Facebook trolls out there, you are going to know that there are people who are going to get in your face. You'll hear it in arguments that you can't use that as a basis of morality. Why? You can't use, you know, separation of church and state. You can't use this as the basis of right and wrong. How do you respond to that?
You'll have a Napoleon situation.
Or Voltaire. Or, you know, I mean,
but how, what's your response? What do you say to them? What do you say to this person?
Then what do you use as the basis?
Yes! Well, what are you going to use? Every, and this is so important, every statement of right and wrong has to have a basis. Otherwise, it's arbitrary. Who says? The one with the most muscle? The one with the most money? The one with the majority? You know, that which is law today is not going to be law tomorrow. If I do not have a sure foundation on which to stand. And man, you just see this, you see this play out in spades in history. We'll talk about a little bit more next week. We'll get it, we'll continue to talk some specifics here, but this is going to bring up what role does the church have. What role do Christians have in the culture or in politics? Because right now we are being beaten back. I don't mean defeated, but you don't have a say. Your church can't have a say. That's what they're telling us. You can have a say, that's fine, but don't, you can't have a say because of this. God is being silenced in the public sphere. So are we supposed to simply be the church private, where we meet on Sundays and maybe occasionally secretly and quietly during the week, and you keep your Jesus in your bedroom or your kitchen or your, at least within your house? Don't bring him out, because I surely don't want to see him. Don't put your Jesus in my face. It was a Dear Abby column yesterday, as a matter of fact. I read Dear Abby. The reason I read Dear Abby is because it's usually on the flip side of the funny pages. And a lot of times it's pornographic. Dear Abby's become very pornographic. And I have to take duct tape and cover Dear Abby. So my daughters, when they're reading the funnies, if Kara's working the jumble, if she decides to look at Dear Abby, is not essentially assaulted by what's in Dear Abby. But anyway, the long and short of it. Yesterday in Dear Abby, there was a lady who was writing about her neighbor. This lady who was writing was an atheist. And she was going, I have this, my neighbor, we like him a lot. Our kids play together, it's great. But they're Christians. And they keep... She keeps dropping Bible verses in conversation. And they keep inviting us to church, even though I've said no thank you. And the atheist is in this quandary. Essentially, how do I get her to shut up? There. You know, let me, you know, we're being respectful to you. I'm not pushing my atheism on you. Quit pushing your Christianity on me. There. So, you know, next week, as we go a little bit further, we'll talk about what is God's desire for us in the culture, in the government, in the political sphere, in society, and the like. Lex Rex. What does that mean?
Law is king.
The law is king. Why is that important for a government?
Abide by the law.
Yes. It constrains. This is so important that the government is constrained because our founders, genius, brilliant men, they knew that the government would, like a cancer, grow to have incredible power. How did they know this?
They seen it themselves. They saw it themselves.
Okay.
In England, with the rich not having, misusing their richness and abusing the low peasants.
Because it's happened in every government prior to this.
There you go. It's history. It's history. Absolute power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, it does. It does. Government wants power. It wants to control. Well, you upstarts over there, you're speaking against me. I'll put you down. Well, there's this issue. So I will muscle it in. Government has got to be constrained. Government has to be under law too. That was revolutionary. It was revolutionary because it used to be that the government was the law. The government made the law. The king made the laws. He wasn't under the law. He made the laws. So what happened in the Bloodless Revolution in the late 1600s in England was the king was held accountable by the people, as the House, the British Parliament essentially began to have authority to hold the king to account. And the king abdicated and fled to France, and William and Mary came in from across the Straits of Dover, and you now have the executive branch, the king, and the legislative branch together. And this gets into then checks and balances. Okay. Why do there need to be checks and balances in a government?
So not one group rules everything.
Same thing. I mean, we're getting the same thing. All of this is important because all of, you know what this all implies? It implies the sinfulness and fallenness of man. Man is naturally crummy. Man is naturally crummy.
I wish I had the verse. It came to me while I was sitting there. I believe it's in Jeremiah. The Lord is judge. The Lord is lawgiver. The Lord is king. It states that. Boom, boom, boom. Essentially, God to be praised. The Lord is judge. The Lord is lawgiver. The Lord is king. In a single verse. And you see, only under God can such a government be good. Because God is righteous and holy and pure. And he has the authority. And he exercises his authority and righteousness, and his laws are pure and right. The laws that he establishes, the laws that he enacts, and his judgment is right and pure and just, and we see that, but man is fallen. And so it's almost like our founders took that verse and divided government there into the judge. The Lord is judge, and we have the Supreme Court. Lord is lawgiver, we have our Congress. The Lord is king, we have an executive branch. And within our Constitution, again, because our founders saw that a president could just get too much power in what he does, and the lawgivers could have too much power, the judges have too much power, that there were checks and balances. Do you know when the Supreme Court makes a decision, does the president have to enact that decision by the Supreme Court? No, he doesn't. He can go.
Congress, though, has to fund it.
Okay, Dred Scott. where, you know, the black man was not really a man but property, Abe Lincoln went, nope, not going to enact that law. So the president can go, fine, you make that decision, that's great, but that's to your decision. And what's the Supreme... What's the Supreme Court? No, governors can do that too. Again, they can. You know, is the NFL going to take away your Super Bowl, though? You know, that we'll talk about that next week, because that is, we see revolutions taking place in our country right now. That states cannot establish laws to themselves because of the pressures that are going to be put on them by educational systems, by Hollywood, Bruce Springsteen not going to do his concert in North Carolina because they enacted a law that says biological men need to use a men's room and biological women need to use a women's restroom. And so therefore, I'm not going to do my concert because you're bigoted. You know, if there are not checks and balances within a government, again, the government just metastasizes and it becomes something that is no longer controllable. And that is where we are today. Essentially, we've addressed some of the questions on the front side, on the back side. We'll talk about the questions on the backside next week. I encourage you to look over some of these. Down at the bottom where it says next week, the two things I was going to address that we will address in some greater detail are racism in our country today, because he brings that up as something that Reformation countries took a long time to deal with. I have to laugh that, you know, he was griping that there wasn't somebody in the United States that didn't take a stand sooner than Wilberforce, when, you know, it was only 30 years later that the United States, I guess, time frame. We always want it to be faster, but it was interesting in our country that it took place with a million people giving their life to essentially eradicate slavery. That's not why the Civil War took place, but it was a chief reason, impetus to it, whereas in England it was just simply a change of a law.
Is Francis Schaeffer American?
Yes, he is. Yep, he is.
Is he still alive?
Oh, no, he died. Yeah. He died shortly after the making of this. Died in the early, mid-80s, 84, 85.
What's the second?
The second one was the non-compassionate use of accumulated wealth. You know, there's almost a socialist whiff there in what he's saying, but we'll talk about that and the problems. Some other revolutions taking place, technological revolution. There are revolutions political, the American Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and the like. There are economic revolutions brought about by the Industrial Age and the technological age. There are also sociological and moral revolutions that take place. And right now we are in the throes of the sexual revolution that really kicked off in the 60s, but has, you know, those embers have been burning through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and they have just exploded in the last 10 years into a raging inferno and a bonfire. But we'll talk about all of those revolutions to some extent next week.